It is the State Capitol Report on the Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We discuss legislative priorities and proposals, including a gun buyback program co-authored by Democratic State Representative Alex Jors of Middleton. The 79th Assembly District also includes parts of Madison and the village of Wanakee. You can be part of the conversation at any point. Call in with a question, share comments, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Representative Jors, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thanks, Kate. It's great to be here this morning.
Yes, you and State Senator Melissa Agard of Madison are urging lawmakers to establish a statewide gun buyback program. Some communities already hold events where residents may voluntarily dispose of unwanted firearms. Why is a statewide gun buyback program needed?
Sure. Well, right now in Wisconsin, there really isn't a way for gun owners to dispose of their unwanted firearms. So through creating this legislation, I've heard stories from folks inheriting their parents' firearms or maybe having a weapon out in the garage that had a chance of being stolen, or even somebody mentioned after a recent school shooting, they just no longer wanted their firearm. So this grant program allows law enforcement to set up a site where people can voluntarily surrender their firearm and know that it's being disposed of safely.
You call it a grant program. How would it work?
Sure. Well, law enforcement has the opportunity, if this bill was passed, to apply for a grant to be able to set up this program. And it's similar. It would, in theory, work the same way as a recent buyback program we had here in Dane County that we saw success with, and over 500 firearms being safely surrendered to the Dane County Sheriff and then disposed of. So we have provisions in here to ensure that there's safe testing and disposal available, and law enforcement would kind of take the lead with that.
Governor Evers had said in 2019 that he'd consider an assault weapons buyback program, but that was met with opposition from Republican lawmakers at the time. What is your approach this time? What is different now?
Sure. Well, I think that my Republican colleagues are seeing and hearing more and more every day from their constituents that addressing gun violence is something that we need to do from all angles. So we recently saw bipartisan support for bills like universal background checks and safe storage legislation that I also have co-sponsored. So I think that my Republican colleagues are seeing and starting to realize that this is an issue that their constituents want to address. So this legislation and other pieces are part of the puzzle of addressing gun violence and creating our safe communities that our constituents want.
There's been analysis by The Trace, which covers guns. It's found that there's little evidence that gun buyback programs reduce firearm-related crime or deaths. Why are these programs popular, especially among law enforcement agencies?
Yeah, that's a great question, because I think that this program, a gun buyback program like this, is just one tool in the toolbox that law enforcement will have to be able to take weapons out of circulation that folks don't want anymore. So right now, there really isn't a great option for people to have a program to safely dispose of those firearms. This would create that. We still need things like universal background checks. We still need things like safe storage laws and being able to ensure that homes and communities are safe. There are multiple options that we need to consider.
You and State Senator Dianne Hesselbein of Middleton are proposing to close a so-called ghost gun loophole that allows people to build untraceable firearms. Why are you proposing this change?
Yes, we are putting forward this additional common sense gun safety solution of closing the ghost gun loophole because of a 2018 shooting that we had here in Middleton, where there was a shooter that was able to compile weapons parts that were not serialized. He was previously prevented from owning a firearm, but was able to get around that because he was able to build his own. So our bill would make sure that weapons components do have serial numbers on them, and also ensure that folks aren't able to purchase and build their undetectable firearm that could pass through a metal detector or otherwise get around law enforcement.
We're talking about state politics and the latest legislation with Alex Jors, a first-term Democratic state representative from Middleton. You can join the conversation with your questions and comments along the way, 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. We're going to move to childcare now. One of your new legislative proposals would allow the State Department of Children and Families to make monthly payments to certified child care providers and licensed child care centers. And the funding would be in addition to existing aid under the Wisconsin Shares Subsidy Program. Why is more funding necessary?
Well, I think that as a parent of a three-year-old, this is just a very real situation that young families are struggling with across our state and looking for affordable child care. Ford Analytics recently detailed that child care for two young children costs more than the tuition at UW-Madison. So I think we really have a workforce issue when it comes to being able to provide affordable child care, not only for those to work as early educators, but then also for parents to be able to access that childcare to join the workforce themselves. So this proposal continues the Child Care Counts program that we know has been successful across our state, and I really hope that we can come to agreement in being able to fund it.
So Child Care Counts, Governor Evers announced directing $170 million in federal funding for Child Care Counts. The program started during the pandemic to keep child care centers open. And Evers last week called the additional funding a stopgap measure. What could be a long-term solution for stabilizing child care in our state?
Correct. Well, I think that we need to make sure that there's continued investment even after this biennium in successful programs like Child Care Counts. You know, our state has seen 50% of Wisconsin living in a child care desert, and that's just something that's unacceptable. So we need to ensure that there's sustained investment past this biennium in programs like this so that providers aren't closing and are able to stay open so that parents have access to affordable options.
Looking across the aisle, Senate Republicans rejected Evers' proposal to spend $340 million in state funds on child care counts. And the Senate passed a $2 billion income tax cut and expanded tax credits for child care costs. Do you support the proposal for child care tax credits?
I think there is some difference in addressing this issue. I think that we definitely do need to ensure that families of young kids are supported. But the thing about child care counts and investing in the industry is essentially keeping providers open. So unfortunately, that's not something that tax credits do. We need to ensure that we are giving the investment to folks that are providing care for our kids. And, you know, I think that's how we get to a place where we have a sustained industry is through the investments that Child Care Counts has provided. So I think that's an important distinction to make, that we need to ensure that there are slots available for families to use.
In terms of the child care workforce, we heard of Republicans wanting to lower the minimum age of child care workers and increase the number of children that the center workers would supervise. What do you think of those plans?
Well, I think that we need to ensure that we're paying our early educators the wage that they need and deserve to be able to take care of our kids. In the same study by Ford Analytics, it showed that the median wage for childcare workers is the 13th lowest out of over 500 other occupations that they serviced or surveyed. So we need to ensure that we're not reducing safety standards, but rather investing in workers' wages so that they want to continue in this workforce and continue being part of our early education solution.
Alex Jors is Democratic State Representative for the 79th Assembly District, elected to the Assembly last year. As we discuss legislation moving through the state capitol and legislation that Jors has authored, call in with a question. You can share your views at any point, 800-642-1234. This is the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.
On the Larry Miller Show, you're always welcome to be a part of the conversation. We want to hear from you about what's important to your life in Wisconsin, from environmental and consumer issues to gardening and helpful how-tos. So join me, Larry Miller, and the experts for accurate advice on topics that impact your life and community. We're here for you on the Ideas Network, weekday mornings at 11 o'clock.
It is the State Capitol Report on the Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're in conversation with Democratic State Representative Alex Jors of Middleton, exploring bills he's authoring, priorities in the Assembly, and you can be part of the conversation along the way. Call in with a question. You can add your views, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. You co-sponsored a bill that would make available $5 million in grants to grow your own teacher preparation program. How would this proposal encourage people to pursue teaching careers?
Yeah, well, that's a great question, Kate, and thanks for asking for it. I was very excited to, at the beginning of my term, go visit at Middleton High School, a grow your own program that they had where students that were interested in becoming teachers were able to sit down with a teacher of their own and talk about good strategies and ways that they can look at this profession and really build a career pathway. So this is something that we wanted to ensure that there was funding to expand throughout the state. As we know that there is a shortage of teachers and that we need to be able to invest in our future, the future of our kids. So this was a bill that I was excited to put forward with Representative Shelton for Grow Your Own programs.
Are grants like these a long-term approach to build and sustain the teacher workforce in coming years?
Well, I think we definitely need to ensure that we're investing in our schools and our teachers so that they feel that Wisconsin is a great option for them to be able to continue their career in teaching. Throughout my whole term of 10 months this year, I've been able to meet with many teachers who feel that a sustained investment such as this and others really helps to build capacity within our public schools. So this is something we're hoping to see passed and implemented throughout the state.
Let's bring on a call now. Tony in Sturgeon Bay. Tony, hi. What would you like to bring up?
Morning. In 10 years, in 2033, there will be more people in this country over 80 than under 18. We don't have a choice. We have to spend, and we have to spend wisely to invest in early childhood education all the way up to graduation in high school, because as a society, if we're going to sustain ourselves, we need all these kids to be really rock stars and have the tools they need to sustain an old population.
Tony, thanks for calling in. Representative Jors, Tony pointing that we have an aging population and we need the future generations to be well prepared for this society.
Yeah, Tony is absolutely right. We need to make sure that not only we're investing in our next generation through our early educators, through childcare, through Grow Your Own programs, but also as a way to attract young families to our state and consider Wisconsin as somewhere that they want to move and start their family. And things like affordable childcare, paid family leave, those are policies that will start to attract a younger generation here to Wisconsin and to stay in Wisconsin. So I absolutely agree with Tony.
Let's bring in Jennifer in River Falls. Jennifer, hi, what's your question?
Hi, I would like to ask about funding priorities for the University of Wisconsin system, including reinstating the raises that were denied to the UW system employees, including people who work in the cafeterias, janitorial staff, and the childcare workers, but were granted to all the other state employees.
Jennifer, thank you for the question. Representative Jors, you also sit on the Assembly Committee on Colleges and Universities. Go ahead.
Yes, I'm glad Jennifer brought this up because this is an important topic that I'm hearing about daily, and specifically to the raises that are being denied by Assembly Speaker Robin Voss through a petty culture war that he wants to continue to peddle throughout Wisconsin. I think that he needs to drop those, and he needs to make sure that we can see these raises come through, because Jennifer's right. It's impacting people's bottom lines. Families throughout Wisconsin that work for the UW system need these raises to be able to pay their bills. So we will continue to push for those things to be approved. And then as a whole, the UW system really needs that sustained investment for the same thing Tony was talking about, so that we're investing in our next generation and they see this as a place, Wisconsin as a place to stay and grow their family and grow a career.
We're discussing state politics with Alex Jors, a Democratic state representative from Middleton. You can join in with your questions and comments, 800-642-1234. Turning to vaccines now, you are co-sponsor of a bill that would require the Department of Health Services to establish a program that provides vaccines to people who are ineligible to receive vaccines at no cost from a federal program. Who would pay for these vaccines?
Sure. Well, I think that as cold and flu season is among us right now, folks are starting to think about being able to get vaccinated. So this is a program that we put forward that would essentially just allow the state to work with insurers to be able to purchase vaccines that are bought in bulk so that we can lower prices or even offer no cost to those who are looking to get their vaccine dose recommendation. So we've seen that 14 other states have implemented these sort of universal purchasing programs and have seen success in being able to provide those vaccines to folks that have needed them.
Is this informed by COVID boosters? What is your thinking behind this legislation?
Sure. Well, previously during the pandemic, these sort of programs were utilized to provide such vaccines to folks that needed them. So we're just looking for another option to allow states to negotiate in bulk for purchases and lower those cost barriers that people are seeing in being able to access vaccines that they need. So I think that even Maine had seen this universal purchase program implemented and was able to save insurance providers over $4 million annually. So this is a win-win for everybody in being able to make sure that folks are healthy and safe.
We're going to hear from a teacher now, Sarah in Mequon. Sarah, hi, go ahead quickly.
Hello there. I'm a teacher. I'm also the child of a retired teacher. My question has to do with the homegrown teacher program that's being piloted in Middleton and the funding breakdown. I guess my main question or concern is that as teachers, we have a lot that's thrown onto our backs, and it always feels like one more thing. And I love the Homegrown Teacher Initiative, but are the teachers who are providing this mentorship for these students being compensated? It feels like otherwise it's just one more responsibility being put onto teachers in Wisconsin for free. And I think that's what's actually driving a lot of us out of the profession, unfortunately.
Thank you, Sarah. Representative Jors.
And Sarah's right. We need to continue to make those sustained investments and ensure that teachers are compensated for the work that they're putting in. And that's something that I hope to see not only with this legislation we're putting forward of $5 million to be able to do these programs, but we've also put forward other legislation to ensure that teachers are fully compensated for all the hard work that they're putting in. And, you know, I hope that we continue to pass these bills so that there can be compensation across the board.
Representative Jors, thank you for joining us.
It's been a pleasure. Thanks, Kate.
Alex Jors is Democratic State Representative for the 79th Assembly District, includes parts of Madison, Middleton, and the village of Wanakee. Jors assumed office in January. This is a State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network. It is the State Capitol Report on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We get up to speed on policymaking that affects Wisconsin's environment and wildlife. The Department of Natural Resources and the panel that sets the state's environmental and wildlife policies, the Natural Resources Board, they're at the center of issues. Call in with a question. You can add your comments, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Danielle Kading is a Wisconsin Public Radio reporter covering the environment, energy, and northern Wisconsin based in the Superior Bureau. Danny, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thanks for having me on, Kate.
So on Friday, the State Department of Natural Resources holds a public hearing about groundwater quality standards. How do the proposed changes compare to current standards? What's going on here?
So with the groundwater standards, basically there's more chemicals that the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources is looking to regulate. Previously, you know, there was another rule package where they were looking to regulate two of the most widely studied PFAS chemicals, and that includes PFOA and PFOS. And as part of that rule package, there were also a bunch of other pesticides and heavy metals that the DNR was looking to regulate. And this time around, they're looking at four chemicals for PFAS that they would set standards for. And that would be based on the Wisconsin Department of Health Services recommendations to set levels at 20 parts per trillion, which is more stringent than drinking water standards we currently have in the state for PFAS.
What were some of the big themes that surfaced at the DNR's information hearing?
Yeah, well, some of the big themes were that residents who are living in PFAS-contaminated communities want to see the DNR tout the benefits of these proposed standards. You know, right now, the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources is evaluating the economic effects of these proposed standards. They held a hearing on the draft economic impact analysis for these chemicals and setting limits on them. And so basically what we heard from residents and environmental groups is that they've been living for years, some of them, on bottled water because they've been struggling with PFAS contamination of private wells. And for them, they think that the cost of inaction or doing nothing to set standards for groundwater would leave people unprotected for several more years and also create more costs down the line. And they pointed to instances in other states like Maine and New Mexico where there's been PFAS contamination found in dairy cows and their milk. And that's led to the culling of thousands of cows in New Mexico, And it's also led to lawmakers in Maine proposing $100 million to deal with PFAS contamination on that state's farms. So they think that, you know, basically that there's going to be more cost down the line, particularly for agriculture in Wisconsin, if we don't do something. And also that it could, you know, provide hundreds of millions of dollars in health savings if we set standards for these chemicals and avoid any potential diseases related to them.
I was struck that you heard from a PepsiCo resident, Jeff Lamont, whose household has relied on bottled water for about 6 years. That, to me, was really, really compelling to think that how much that person's life would be changed.
Yeah, I mean, for people living in the town of PepsiCo, they've known that their private wells have been contaminated with PFAS since 2017. And in that time, you know, that contamination stems from Tyco Fire Products fire training facility in Marinette. And that company has provided bottled water and paid for filtration systems for homeowners. But that still is disruptive, like you said, Kate, where they're using it for cooking. They're using it for brushing their teeth. They're, in some cases, using it for showering because they're worried about, well, what's going to be the effects of PFAS contamination if I shower in water that's contaminated? So it's definitely disrupted their lives. And in some cases, residents have said that their blood lead levels are much higher than what other people would see in communities that aren't contaminated by PFAS. And so it's something that they really would like to see addressed and put standards in place that would protect other communities and not just theirs.
How do the proposed changes compare to the water quality standards held by Northern Wisconsin Native American tribes?
How do they compare to the water quality standards of Northern Wisconsin Native American tribes? That's a good question, Kate. I can't answer that for you.
Okay. Can you explain the timeline and the process for rural revisions, for the rural revisions that are pertaining to PFAS? What is the timeline here for the DNR?
Well, the DNR always has 30 months to craft a rule and get it put in place and approved by the legislature. My understanding is they began this process late last year. So there's still time for them to get this put in place. Right now, they're currently finalizing and still accepting comments that they've received related to this draft economic impact analysis before they would issue a final report on, you know, what they would expect the cost of implementing this rule to be on businesses and local governments. And they would expect to wrap that up by the end of next year. And then they'll also have more opportunity for public comment in early next year as they're continuing to develop these standards.
We're talking about the environment and state politics with WPR reporter Danielle Kading. You can join in with your questions and comments at 800-642-1234. So, Danny, Republicans in the legislature are supporting a measure that would provide grants to local governments to manage PFAS contamination. And the measure cleared a committee, now heads to the full Senate. What are Republicans saying the measure would accomplish?
Well, Republicans are saying that this bill provides grants to municipalities and landfills to address PFAS contamination, and that it also limits the power of the State Department of Natural Resources to order innocent landowners, as they've called them, to clean up the chemicals. So under this bill, the DNR wouldn't be able to require a property owner to test for PFAS under the state's spills law unless they had probable cause to believe that levels of the chemicals would likely exceed federal or state standards. And they also wouldn't be able to prevent or delay development projects based on the presence of PFAS unless there's a substantial risk to the environment or public health, and other limited exceptions.
And meanwhile, the DNR is allowing bottled water manufacturers to sell their products without testing the water for PFAS. How common is PFAS in bottled water? What is happening on this front?
So I just want to be clear that it's not the DNR that requires testing of bottled water or regulates that. It would be the Wisconsin Department of Agriculture that oversees testing of bottled water plants in Wisconsin. And currently, the Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection is not requiring the state's roughly 30 bottled water plants to test for PFAS. And that's due in part to the fact that the DNR currently lacks groundwater standards for PFAS, because in the past, the DNR has looked, and the Department of Agriculture has looked to the DNR's groundwater standards, which are more comprehensive than drinking water standards. They cover way more chemicals or pesticides or heavy metals than the state's drinking water standards do. And so the thought is, you know, that would be more comprehensive. And then also currently the Federal Food and Drug Administration also does not have standards for these chemicals. They're waiting on the Environmental Protection Agency to develop drinking water standards before they move forward on either accepting the EPA's standards for testing bottled water or deciding whether to, you know, set their own standard to ensure protection for people.
Okay, well, watch that as it unfolds at the federal level as well. Turning to the Natural Resources Board, last week, Republicans rejected four of Governor Tony Evers' appointees to the board, and Evers then appointed four other people to the board. And Democrats, including Senator Melissa Agard of Madison, have voiced frustration with the legislature's response to appointees.
Why the heck would they put themselves through this process if they're just going to be pulled over a cheese grater and denied the ability to stand up and serve the great state of Wisconsin?
So, Danny, how likely are Evers' new appointees to be approved?
That's a very good question, and one that environmental advocates and conservationists and a former DNR secretary is asking. You know, if you're looking for someone who is going to agree with the Republican-controlled legislature, that's unlikely because we have a Democratic governor who is appointing these candidates. The idea is that we want them to be qualified to serve on this board, and they have to have a variety of experience in conservation and also urban areas, you know, to represent the broad range of issues that the Natural Resources Board might see as it sets regulations for the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. And so it's uncertain how Republican senators would receive these new members or new appointees to the board. But they have said that basically they felt, you know, maybe some of the candidates weren't unqualified or that they would be willing to violate state law in serving on the Natural Resources Board. And so we'll see what they think about these new appointees to the board.
What is on the line for the board? What do appointment rejections mean for the board's ability to carry out its duties?
Well, that's also a very good question, because this week the Natural Resources Board is set to take up the DNR's wolf management plan, which has been pretty contentious among lawmakers and conservationists and tribes and animal rights groups because of the emotions surrounding the wolf status, whether it's you know, listed as an endangered species or under state management and allowing a wolf hunt. And so now we've got four new appointees who have only been there for about a week, and they are going to be set to vote on a more than 170-page plan on how to manage wolves if they are ever delisted and returned to state management. And that is something that former DNR Secretary George Meyer has expressed concerns about, whether they would be in a position to vote on that plan this week after only being on the board for a week. So there's some concerns that maybe the process is being rushed here and that there should be a moment to breathe and take a step back.
Danielle Kading is a Wisconsin Public Radio reporter covering environmental issues around the state. She's based at WPR Superior Bureau. You can be part of this discussion at the intersection of the environment and politics. Call in with a question, share your views, 800-642-1234. It's the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is the State Capitol Report on the Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We examine the intersection of Wisconsin's environment and politics, getting up to speed on policy issues, on hearings, developments at the Capitol with WPR reporter Danielle Kading, who covers the environment. Call in with a question. Share what's on your mind. The number to join the discussion is 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Danny, the Wisconsin Senate last week advanced a bill which would set a population goal for wolf species in our state. What concerns about wolves are you hearing from supporters of the population goal?
Well, from supporters of the goal, basically they would like to see a population goal set in place so that they know a target to manage wolves to if it's ever delisted as an endangered species. And part of the reason for that is because Wisconsin mandates a wolf hunt when the animal isn't under federal protection. And so by having a goal in place, it ensures that we're able to manage the population to levels that are necessary to reduce livestock and wolf conflicts in their mind. You know, some hunters and farmers want to see the state set a population goal in line with 350 wolves, which is the management goal that was set under the last wolf plan that was first written in 1999. So it's more than two decades old.
Wow. So without having a hard limit, what does that allow state wildlife officials to do in managing the wolf population?
Well, the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources has defended its approach because they say it would be more flexible and target, you know, more specific areas where they're seeing conflicts with wolves, because it would set out six wolf management zones in the state under the plan, and they would be able to set quotas in each zone according to what they're seeing. And so they're saying it provides more flexibility to adapt as the wolf population changes, and by locking themselves into a specific number, it may not be biologically or scientifically sound.
How is the gray wolf at the heart of a pretty contentious political argument in the legislature? This is a heated argument.
It's definitely a very heated argument. I mean, and this goes back more than a decade where we've seen a back and forth in the wolf status. You know, it's been listed and delisted several times. And basically, there's just doesn't seem to be any common ground between lawmakers and hunters and farmers and animal rights groups and tribes. They all have different ideas for what they would like to see with the animal. Ojibwe tribes don't want to see a recreational hunt for wolves at all because they view the wolf as a brother. Meanwhile, you know, hunters and farmers, they want to see the population reduced drastically because they say it's having a very negative effect on farms and hunting dogs in the state. Although I will note that DNR data shows a tiny fraction of the state's more than 64,000 farms have been affected by wolf depredations. And the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel just reported that Wisconsin saw the lowest number of farms with wolf conflicts in 15 years, according to the DNR's most recent monitoring data.
We recently talked with President John D. Johnson of the Lac du Flambeau Band of Lake Superior Chippewa, and Johnson said some treaty rights of northern Wisconsin tribes might be challenged by wolf management legislation.
Yeah, it's going to be challenged again, probably with the wolf hunt. And, you know, we're trying to protect these animals. And these are a big part of our ecosystem, you know, that help us out as people, as human beings in our ceded territory. And I know that case is going to come up again soon. And our tribes are ready, you know, to go downstate and have conversations about this.
Danny, how does the approval of a statewide wolf population goal affect tribes in Wisconsin and their rights to hunt, fish, and gather?
Well, if they were to set a population goal for wolves, you know, clearly, as John Johnson has said, you know, they are very concerned about how this would affect their treaty rights. And as I've said, you know, Ojibwe tribes don't want to see a recreational hunt of wolves, and they would rather not see that animal hunted at all. And we saw in the last go around in the 2021 wolf hunt, in response to that, tribes filed a lawsuit to try and stop another hunt that was supposed to take place that fall because of their concerns over how the state was managing wolves, because they're worried that there's going to be, you know, like what we saw in the February 2021 wolf hunt, where we saw 218 wolves killed in less than 3 days, and that consumed all of the state licensed hunters and Ojibwe tribes' portion of the quota. Mm. So there's a lack of trust of the DNR from many different groups, including tribes, that their treaty rights would be respected as part of wolf management.
We're talking about the environment and state politics with WPR reporter Danielle Kading. You can join in with your question, 800-642-1234. Jeff in Appleton is here. Hi, Jeff.
Hi there. You know, the wolves are a part of the ecosystem, and they definitely have a place, and we can't allow what has happened to them in the past to happen again. But management does require removing some, and if that's the hunt, then that's the hunt. And if that hunt is not going to take place, I would throw out the suggestion of removing some by live trapping and establishing populations in Dane and Milwaukee counties. And then we may start to see the attitude of these sort of things start to change when people who never experience a wolf start to experience them and see what they do.
Jeff, thanks. Yeah, Jeff, thank you for the call. And Jeff is saying there, Danny, you know, we have to have more options on the table and make sure this is a statewide issue.
Yeah, that's part of the challenge of wolf management currently, is that whenever it's listed, you can't kill wolves, even if there are problem wolves that are attacking livestock. And so there are some, like U.S. Senator Tammy Baldwin, who would like to see, you know, more flexibility in the management by, you know, considering them as threatened. That would give them the ability to manage problem wolves. But currently that is not an option as long as the wolf is listed. And again, state management, there has just been a lot of concerns about how the DNR would go about that, given, you know, a Republican law that was put in place to mandate a wolf hunt.
And very quickly, as we wrap up, the Natural Resources Board appointees, as you mentioned, could have a vote in what happens regarding the wolf management bill. What happens if new appointees aren't approved soon?
Well, I guess we would just see more of what we saw last time, which is that these members are serving on the board and they can take action and, you know, on policy issues, but they could be fired at any time. And we've seen that across many boards and commissions across the state where they're serving under the threat of being removed at any time.
Danny, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Kate.
Danielle Kading is a Wisconsin Public Radio reporter covering the environment, energy in northern Wisconsin, based at the Superior Bureau. This is the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network.